Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. So recently in Massachusetts, there has been increasing focus on a project, a new electricity power plant that is proposed to be built in Peabody, Massachusetts, which is a town on the North Shore of Boston. That electric power plant is called a peaker plant, which would only turn on occasionally when demand is very high. So there's a lot of background as to exactly how that peaker plant came to be. The simple story is that an organization with a very funny acronym name, and I'll say it slowly, so it's MWEC. It stands for Massachusetts Municipal Wholesale Electric Corporation. Right, MWEC, which is a kind of this nonprofit entity kind of thing that floats around another acronym, which is MLP, which is Municipal Light Plant. And a municipal light plant is basically a little utility in a town. There are, 40 or 50 of them around in Massachusetts. They generate a lot of greenhouse gas, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, the MLPs all talk to MWEC. Right, so we're really into the alphabet soup. Turns out MWEC, which is this top-level organization, wants to build the power plant in Peabody. And so the MWEC, acting for the MLPs, wants to build a power plant in Peabody. And they had to go to yet another acronym called the DPU, the Department of Public Utilities in Massachusetts. I won't give you the Massachusetts acronym, right? But you've got all, so the MWEC and the MLPs go to the DPW for a hearing, right? MWEC was requesting that the Department of Public Utilities grant MWEC the authority to finance $170 million, two tranches of money, $85 million to build the plant, $85 million to refinance the plant in case something gets a little funky, right? It sounds like $85 million to build this power plant. There was a hearing on Zoom, which everyone could listen to. And of course, you can listen to the next one if you want. It's this all public utility hearing. There were people speaking against this peaker power plant in Peabody. And that much of that effort was organized by our guest, the executive director of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network, Sarah Dooling. How are you doing, Sarah?
Good morning, Ted. I'm doing really well. I'm so happy to be here this morning talking about this really important issue.
So tell me, my little alphabet soup story. I got the can of Campbell's soup off the shelf and picked out letters. Did I more or less get the story right? Tell me, what happened on Monday, April 26th at the Zoom meeting in front of the DPU, the Department of Public Utilities?
Excellent. Yes. So for our listeners, the Department of Public Utilities, they're the part of state government that oversees and is responsible for decisions related to all public utilities and private investor-owned utilities. So I want to stress that we are talking about two different associations that represent public utilities. The first association that Ted referred to is MWEC. And there is a second association called Energy New England, E&E. However, the public utilities that we are talking about today, those utilities signed on to a contract that MWEC has been shopping around since 2015. And that contract is called a power sales agreement. And it basically, for the public utilities, there were 14 of them that initially signed this contract, committing those 14 utilities to a share in this dirty capacity resource. That's the language, this peaker plant and compressor station. So two pieces of infrastructure. So this contract basically says they have a share in this and that they commit to a certain percentage to buy a certain percentage of the energy generated.
These little municipal light plant towns, mm-hmm. buy a percentage of the power and percentage of the ownership of this plant in Peabody, right? That's the deal.
Right. And this is power intended to meet what is called peak demand that you were talking about in the opening comments of our podcast today. And so this is energy that is required above and beyond what normal operations can generate. And so the contract itself is basically a petition on the part of MWIC to the Department of Public Utilities seeking approval to issue two revenue bonds, as you were mentioning, totaling $170 million. And so this is a financial contract. And so the hearing on Monday that was hosted by the Department of Public Utilities, this hearing had two parts to it. The first part was a public comment period, a public comment hearing where advocates and MCAN gave our perspective, we raised objections, we raised our concerns. And then the second part of the hearing is what's called an evidentiary hearing. So this is basically like a court within DPU. And that was run very much like what you would see in a courtroom with the DPU commissioners asking questions of MWIC, the CEO of MWIC, who was on the call in the hearing, and the consultant that MWIC had brought in from the analysis group, Mr. Paul Hibbard. And I can certainly talk more about all of that. The point being that this hearing was about really for the commissioners to try to figure out, does approving this contract serve the public interest?
So let me just restate that. The DPU is trying to decide if the contract that MWIC has requested is in the public interest, however we define that, right? That's their job. The DPU is to protect the public interest.
Correct. Right. So to protect the public from an unreliable grid, to protect the public from avoidable price volatility in prices for electricity. And with the new climate bill that becomes law in June, DPU's mission is to be expanded and to take into account issues of equity and to take into account climate change.
Interesting. So what we're talking about is a Zoom meeting that happened on Monday, April 26th, right?
Correct.
And in fact, you were, so tell me, can you describe, you were one of the first people to give testimony. What was the perspective of MCAN on this peaker plant?
Sure. So, as you know, Ted, MCAN, we have been, this peaker plant issue was brought to our attention by a Wakefield city councilor, town councilor, and we have been working with that individual this past month, as well as working with ActionWorks, Community ActionWorks, which is another nonprofit, and Community ActionWorks is supporting local residents in Peabody on opposing this peaker plant because the proposed peaker plant is scheduled to be built in Peabody within half a mile of two different environmental justice communities. So these are folks that are primarily African-American, Latinx, low-income households where English is not the primary language spoken. So Peabody residents will be the most impacted by this proposed plant. And so when we think about the public interest of this plant, this peaker plant is being proposed to be powered by natural gas and oil. So this is what I mean by a dirty capacity resource. And this kind of combined fuel peaker is very well known for producing black carbon, particulate matter 2.5, which is such a small sized airborne pollutant that it lodges in the lungs of children and the elderly. And it is a major contributor to all kinds of problems, but especially respiratory problems.
Just there's a couple of very important words there. I just want to put a flashing red light on. You said 2.5 particles, right? That's kind of a buzzword, not a buzzword, but I mean, 2.5 micron size particles, which are incredibly small. But I mean, this is the language that gets used, right? And when you say black carbon, eventually we're saying soot. So yes. This particular kind of plant makes a lot of dirty soot. In addition to the carbon dioxide and all the bad gases, right? It's just making dust that lands on your windshield kind of thing, right? And then When that lodges in the lungs of children who live nearby at this 2.5 micron, again, you hear all kinds of references to it. I guess it just, okay, good. So that's one of the primary public health objectives.
Correct.
Objections, right, to the PICO plant. Is this sort of, okay. And the fact that I think that maybe you'll say this, but the PICO plant is designed to run on when this high demand, which typically happens to be hot August, humid days. So on top of all this standard stress, then you add on this additional 2.5 micron stuff that comes when you're running the plant.
Mm-hmm. And I also want to emphasize again that the context is really important here. While the hearing itself was about the petition on the part of MWIC for financing, the reality is that financing contract will, if approved, result in a PICO plant that is built in a very particular location. And so even though the hearing itself on Monday was not what is called a siting hearing, it was really about financing, there are really strong reasons for thinking about where is this proposed PICO plant going to be built. And it is proposed to be built on City of Peabody-owned land within half a mile of two different environmental justice communities, very close to a public school, right across the street from a mixed-use development project, the 58 Mills Project, and then immediately adjacent to the river right there in Peabody. So in many ways, this is an incredibly risky location, independent of the financing piece. If we're thinking about public interest, the location is equally important and frankly, equally risky.
Question, do you know, perhaps you don't, but I mean, the request is, MWEC says, please let me borrow $170 million, right? Is the contract saying, I want $170 million to build the plant in this location and there's no other choice? Or could they, after they get the $170 million, could they say, oh, I want to build this in Maine, you know, and go to a different location?
The way I understand the contract now, it is set up to be built in Peabody. I'm not sure what kind of legal flexibility there is on changing the siting, on changing the location.
You're right. The it sounds like MWIC has planned to build in Peabody, so the money is all focused on this particularly bad, this egregiously bad site. Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. And I also want to stress.
Interesting distinctions are between just for people to keep. There's a finance track and the siting track, which are they're linked, of course, but I mean they're formally different processes.
Correct.
As you're saying, right? And so, Correct. Okay.
Right. So in addition to the public school and the environmental justice communities, I think if we're talking about trying to evaluate the public interest of financing this proposed PICO, I think additional context is warranted here to really integrate into the DPU commissioner's decision-making process. And that is Peabody has been hit so hard by COVID. So residents have had a really hard time coming out from under the economic consequences of COVID, a retracting economy. And to add yet another polluting facility in this community, from MCAN's perspective, undermines two things. It undermines the community's ability to recover their health and their well-being, because we're going to worsen air pollution if this PICO is built. And secondly, It undermines Peabody Light's ability and all of the other MLPs that have signed this contract to invest in clean energy and renewable energy and innovative technology like battery storage to help transition not only their individual muni districts, but the Commonwealth as a whole to clean energy and to meet our now required mandate of net zero emissions by 2050. So this contract was developed back in 2015. So much has changed in that time period. We have a new climate bill that will become law in June. We have a year of pandemic behind us that is really important for thinking about what kind of utilities, what kind of infrastructure we want our utilities to invest in. And this seems to me, to MCAN, this seems to be a very risky investment because at some point in time, if this peaker plant is built, it will become inoperable. It will become too expensive to operate. And it will, because it will become, it will at some point be out of compliance with state requirements for muni districts to meet net zero emissions. So,
and that's a buzzword people should I say buzzword, but I mean, there's a term, right? And I think you would say it's called stranded assets, which yes. Typically is very abstract. People have no idea what, you know, what the heck is a stranded asset, but right. From MWIC's perspective, they're going to spend, $170 million building this plant. And in God knows by 2030, it could be illegal to run the plant. So they're standing there with a bill for $170 right. million. They can't do anything with it's stranded. And that's bad for everyone, in particular, the people in the MLP towns.
Right. The ratepayers in these mini districts will be straddled with this debt. And they'll keep pay- if this peaker plant is approved, these ratepayers will have to pay that debt off even when that plant ceases operations.
And if it ceases operation early, they still owe until like 2050 or something, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the other interesting concept that you introduced is the idea of storage, which will lead us to a discussion of what's an alternative, right? No, I don't think anyone, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think anyone disagrees that there is a need for some way to have this quote unquote capacity available on a hot day. You want the electricity, right? But how would you do it other than through this dirty 2.5 micron generating power plant that we, you know,
it's going to make us sick, especially Peabody residents sick. So this is a great question. And there are a couple of things to keep in mind. And the first thing is to think about the renewable alternative. So we're talking about solar and wind. And and applying concepts like, so let me back up. These alternatives, they are out there. The feasibility of replacing a dirty peaker plant with a clean energy option needs to be evaluated. It needs to be designed. It needs to be modeled so that we know that renewables and solar can generate sufficient energy and that there is technology to capture any surplus, any excess. And that's the idea of a battery storage system. And quite frankly, the trend right now in clean energy infrastructure is to move away from a dirty, centralized form of infrastructure and to think about smaller scaled clean energy, decentralized forms of infrastructure where renewable production and battery capture, battery storage is distributed in many different locations, that it's not all done in one site and sent out from that same site. So the trend right now is a completely different kind of design.
And so just to be clear, what we're talking about here is instead of building this gas plant that you can turn on when you need it, you replace that gas plant with what's essentially a battery, a big battery to be sure, right? But a mm-hmm. battery that you charge up using wind turbines. And mm-hmm. then that's what gets turned on demand to provide the quote unquote capacity, right? Mm-hmm. That's the concept.
That's one option.
Once you go there, you say, well, I'm going to have a lot of small batteries in different towns and, you know, mm-hmm. have the same capacity, just not in necessarily in the same place. But I guess the important point or an important point is that because this plant was conceptualized in 2015 before these technologies were available, MWEC has not done a thorough job of considering the alternatives, right?
Correct.
And so that's one call to say, hey, okay, fine, fine. Please tell me that, you know, go look at how you could spend that $85 million on a renewable technology, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And if there is anybody listening to this podcast who has $25,000 or can contribute to a $25,000 possibility, MCAN, I met with the Clean Energy Group out of Vermont. They are well known for developing alternatives to dirty peaker plants. This is their business. And they have done this in New York very successfully. And I met with them and they said, Sarah, it will cost MCAN $25,000 to do a clean energy assessment for this particular proposal. So if anybody is listening, feel free to contact me and we can get this going. Because as of now, there is no quantitative clean energy assessment study for this particular proposed peaker plant and compressor station.
Wow. Well, there you go. I mean, that's good news. I mean, that's so this discussion leaves people saying, oh, my God, you know, there's this thing happening. What the heck can I do about it? Well, here
right.
you go. What we need to do is to study and make, I mean, it's not the opposition to this plan. It's not our responsibility to tell MWEC what to do. But if we have credible technical proposals as to what you would do instead of building that gas plant, that lends a lot. And people can, point being that if you're listening, you can help out with this campaign to do that arithmetic and figure out what mm-hmm. how big a battery we need, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So in terms of where we are right now in the process, so as you mentioned, Ted, there was a public comment hearing on Monday, April 26th, that was immediately followed by this evidentiary hearing where MWEC was and MWEC's counsel were asked questions by the DPU commissioners. Just to remind folks on the podcast, MCAN had petitioned the DPU to be granted legal standing, which is known as intervener status, to be able to do the same thing, to ask questions of MWEC, to make discoveries, to do cross-examination. We were denied intervener status. And this is important because DPU in Massachusetts routinely denies individuals and organizations to have intervener status. And this is in direct contrast to the New Hampshire Department of Public Utilities, which actually does grant ratepayers legal status to challenge utilities in a DPU court. So there is a longer game here, which is really interesting, about the need to actually reform DPU and to lower these standards to meet intervener status, because this gatekeeping that DPU is doing around intervener status and not granting it to organizations and individuals in Massachusetts is part of the power dynamics that constrain the effectiveness of advocates on changing projects like this.
Wow. So let me try and restate that. What we're saying is the DPU has high bars, very clear rules about who gets to be a quote-unquote intervener, which means someone who gets to be in the courtroom and talking, right? And that is currently granted only on this basis that, like, MWEC gets intervener mm-hmm. status, but MCAN was not granted that. And what you're saying is we need to change that rule to make it easier for organizations like MCAN or individual people, or mm-hmm. Follow the New Hampshire model, where it's mm-hmm. easy to get in front of the DPU and make your case and be mm-hmm. part of the game.
Right, exactly. So that is part of changing the power dynamics that opens up more doors for advocates of all kinds, especially clean energy advocates and environmental justice advocates to say, look, this kind of financing contract is risky, both in terms of the potential of a stranded asset that the ratepayers will be straddled with that debt, but also continuing to make PBD residents sick. And, you know, approving this kind of contract will actually undermine the public interest. It will worsen people's finances and health. So what happened on Monday at the end of the evidentiary hearing, so that was concluded with the DPU hearing officer saying, okay, the next two deadlines are for MWIC and MCAN, because we have been granted this limited participant status, to both submit briefings, right? Both submit an argument, a justification on the MWIC side, justifying why this contract is needed, and on MCAN's side, once again, outlining our objections to the approval of this contract for public health reasons, for bad financial investment reasons, and for the broader context of the changing state policies that have happened over the past year.
Which is the roadmap bill.
Yes.
Which is the carbon emissions, which we haven't even barely touched on, right? Yes.
Right. Right. And I also, the briefings are due to DPU on May 13th. And then MCAN has until May 20th. To reply to MWIC's briefing, and likewise MWIC has until May 20 to reply to MCAN's briefing. And then at that point, DPU will review those documents and make a decision. And at that point, I just want to emphasize that will conclude the formal DPU process. MWIC's, advocates and MWIC's concerns will be on record, public record. Mm-hmm. And at that point, there are a couple of different directions we can go in, but that will conclude the DPU process. There is the possibility or the option that MCAN appeals the DPU's decision if that decision is to approve the financing contract. That's a very expensive process. It would take over a year. And so there are other options we are exploring as well. And that includes looking into the reopening the MEPA process. So reopening, because the climate bill will become law in June, reevaluating and reopening the siting of this particular proposed peaker and compressor station
being close. That's the MEPA process.
Yes.
Which would be Massachusetts Environmental Protection Agency, right? MEPA.
MEPA is Massachusetts Environmental Policy Act.
Okay.
And it is under the purview of the Department of Environmental Protection. And so MEPA, basically, because of how it has been changed through the recent roadmap bill, now has an expanded process for big projects like this peaker plant. It includes more stakeholder involvement, more resident involvement, especially from environmental justice communities. And there would be different criteria applied to evaluating the legality of this proposed peaker being so close to two environmental justice communities.
Wow.
So there are many. So the bottom line is this fight is not over. Right. This fight has to be ongoing. And there are a couple of different ways people can get involved. You can certainly go to MCAN's website and read about this on our website. You can also donate to our Clean the Peak campaign. Our legal fees are mounting. And if people specifically are interested in funding a clean energy alternative study, we are also fundraising for that. In addition, if people want, if you live in a muni district that has signed the contract, but you think there are grumblings, you think that there perhaps is not a unified front there, We are working with our advocates to keep pushing and prodding local muni districts to rethink their commitment.
Wow.
Yeah. Because we really are invested in our muni districts. We want MLPs to be part of the climate solution. And this financing contract out of MWIC does, in, from MCAN's perspective, does not position muni districts as a as climate leaders. It actually positions muni districts as climate detractors. You know, these are, and we, that's unacceptable. And we need to really make sure that the financing does not go through to the best of our efforts and to keep the pressure on.
Wow. Well, there you go. I mean, I think we should, will you come back another time as this story unfolds and tell us more? Because this has been a great summary of where we are. What I will do is put up some links on the MCAN blog to some of the stuff we talked about. Of course, the MCAN blog is on the MCAN site, where there is also the Clean the Peak campaign button. So you go to the MCAN website, you can find all this stuff. If you have questions about the show, please send me a an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Sarah, how can people get in touch with you?
The best way is to email me, sarah@massclimateaction.net. That is sarah@massclimateaction.net.
Super, super, super. Anyway, you are probably listening to this show on your smartphone using some modern podcast distribution app. Please have all your friends listen to this show on their iPhones using their modern podcast distribution apps. You can search around. It's the Massachusetts Climate Action Climate Minute. We want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support to keep us aware of all the important things that are happening out there. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Sarah, thank you so much for giving us this update. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely, Ted. My pleasure.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.